Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Were you on the yoga mat at sunrise this morning, practicing your downward dog while wearing your smartwatch? Perhaps you're on your way back from the gym after your spin class, or maybe you're looking forward to an upcoming hot stone massage in your local spa. Well, these and more are all activities that fall within the wellness industry. But just how much is that worth to the Irish and the international economy? And how will the wellness economy weather a cost of living crisis? Adam Maguire is here, RTE business journalist, to explain all to us. Good morning, Adam. Good to have you back with us. So tell us, what exactly is the wellness industry?
It's kind of whatever you want it to be, really. It essentially covers anything that's focused on physical or mental health. So that can be really hard to pin down because it covers health, but it could also cover fitness, beauty, and even people's hobbies kind of come into the mix as well. So, you know, obvious examples might be the likes of, you know, personal trainers, gym instructors, nutritionists, therapists, but you could also reasonably include, you know, physios, masseuses, life coaches, beauticians, self-help gurus, not to mention, you know, alternative areas like reflexology and acupuncture. Then we have influencers who might not actually fit into any of those categories, but they're selling wellness online, and maybe they're selling products and services and they're making money off that. We have the places people go to, the gyms, the health spas and so on. And then you mentioned some of the accessories, you know, the likes of your smartwatch, your cookbooks, apps, health foods, supplements, medicines, the clothing as well. That's a big thing, that, you know, the athleisure clothing. So it covers a multitude. And basically, if you can claim that it makes someone feel better, either physically or mentally, you can reasonably say it's part of the
wellness industry. So hard then to put a value on it because it's so vast.
Exactly. And because, you know, one person's definition might differ from another. So, for example, McKinsey says that the global value of the wellness industry is $1.5 trillion, which is massive in itself. Meanwhile, the Global Wellness Institute, which it should be said exists to promote this industry, says it's worth $4.4 trillion, which is, you know, three times the size. But even if you take that lower figure, that's still massive. That's about three times the size of the Irish economy in GDP terms. If it were a country, it would have the fourth biggest economy in the European Union, the wellness industry. So it's growing as well at a phenomenal rate. McKinsey reckons 5-10% expansion in the wellness industry every year. In Ireland alone, a report from Euromonitor put the figure of what it's worth here at €2.3 billion in 2020. But again, a fairly broad definition there. It seemed to be including like healthy foods. So it might not actually be wellness, might just be fruit and vegetables, but it's seen as part of the wellness industry.
So if you take that 2.3 billion, what's the biggest part of that?
Well, it would be food, would be health foods, and said some of that would be specific, you know, health supplements and so on. But okay, it also seemed to cover just healthy food that you would buy in the shop as
and
well.
Fitness?
Fitness as well is a big part. You know, for example, €300 million being spent on fitness clubs in Ireland alone every year. Apparently, the average spend is the guts of €600 per person, which is absolutely
per year.
Massive, but per year. So a lot of money there.
So because of this, because it's a huge pie, there's a lot of big companies that want a piece of it.
Yeah, obviously there are a lot of companies that are exclusively focused on fitness and wellness because there's money there. But what I think is really interesting that we've seen in the last decade or so, a lot of companies that you wouldn't think of as being part of wellness or fitness are making big money in it. A really good example is a local one to us, Glanbia. People probably still think of it as a dairy firm. They think of Avonmore Milk or maybe even Gain Nutrition, the animal feed. But actually, it's actually sold on those brands, the Glanbia Co-op, in the last year, in part because it wants to focus on the fitness industry. It's making far more money from that than it ever was from the likes of dairy or grain. Last year, it had revenues of €1.3 billion from what it calls performance nutrition. That's protein supplements, energy bars, and so on. It owns the biggest sports nutrition brand in the world, Optimum Nutrition. It also owns the SlimFast brand. It bought that a couple of years ago. And you're probably wondering, like, well, what's the link here? How does a milk and cheese company become a big provider in sports nutrition? Whey is the answer. It's, of course, a byproduct of cheese production. In the past, it was something that they just gave to the pigs. It was kind of a waste product.
Yeah, and now we all want to take it.
Yeah, it's extremely high in protein. It became a big part of fitness and bodybuilding. Glanbia realised it's sitting on this gold mine and it started focusing that in a big way about 14 years ago. Now the biggest producer of whey protein in the US. Apple, another example. You mentioned the smartwatch as an example. We think of Apple for iPhones, iPads, but they make the Apple Apple Watch, which is very much positioned as a fitness and a wellness device. It's bringing in somewhere in the region of $12 to $14 billion in sales revenue every year for Apple. Again, if you broke that out and as a standalone firm, it'd be something like the third biggest sports company in the world in terms of revenue. They sold about 30.7 million watches last year. That's 10 million more than the Swiss watch industry. So massive, massive sales there. And they're even making money now from subscriptions. You get a fitness subscription, pay €10 every month, and you get access to online workouts that you can link up with your watch and your smartphone and so on and do your workouts at home.
And people are very much focused on their steps now because of the Apple Watch and the Garmin and all of the other brands.
Yeah, it tracks your heart rate and your sleep and everything like that.
Now, the online workout, you mentioned there that Apple have one of those products, a fitness app. That really came into its own, that whole business, didn't it, during the pandemic?
Yeah, it really did. We can remember that gyms and fitness classes weren't possible during the height of the COVID pandemic. But at the same time, people probably started focusing more on their physical health and their mental health because of they're in lockdown. So the industry, despite those challenges, managed to adapt, managed to keep growing. You know, we saw online fitness classes becoming the norm. More people started dipping into wearable devices. They started using wellness apps, telehealth, where they were consulting medical professionals over video or phone chats became common as well. A good example of a wellness app that's done well on the back of the pandemic is Calm. It's a meditation app. It also gets famous people to read bedtime stories in a very calm voice, and you can access all that for a monthly fee. It was worth valued at $2 billion.
We'd buy anything, wouldn't we?
We really would. Yeah, exactly. Just listen to a famous person read out a bedtime story. Another really interesting example, Peloton. The numbers on this one really boggle my mind. So they essentially sell a stationary bike or a treadmill with a screen attached that you can stream live fitness classes.
Yeah, what people will remember from Sex and the City when your man had a heart attack.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mentioned that in a minute because that was bad news for the company. but it's not available here, but we have Germany as our euro price equivalent.
Yeah.
€1,500 is the cheapest bike. So €1,500 for a stationary bike. And then to get full use of that, you're paying pretty much €40 a month for a subscription fee.
That's really expensive.
So it's phenomenal money, but a lot of people spent that money during the pandemic because it was the closest they could get to that kind of fitness class.
But in terms of a subscription service, €40
€40 a month
is really
it's a huge,
high.
Huge amount of money, even without the upfront cost of the bike. I should say, though, that sales have tanked in Peloton. Only so many people will spend that kind of money. And you mentioned the Sex and the City revival. That really dented sales as well. It was a really bad bit of publicity for Peloton.
They had a treadmill as well that they launched.
They had a treadmill and there were safety issues with that as well. Yeah, and they fought hard not to recall that, but they had to in the end, yeah. So they started really well in the pandemic, but they've had a really rough time in recent months.
So we've established then that the whole wellness industry, while it's hugely popular and it's doing really well, it's hard to define. And it also can be unreliable, is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think humans have always been susceptible to promises of better health and happiness. And unfortunately, when we have that susceptibility and you've money to be made, people are going to take advantage of that. And it's not a new problem either. You can go all the way back through human history and find examples of, you know, cure-all drugs and wonder drugs. And even the terms we use nowadays to describe these kind of things go way, way back in history. The elixir of life, for example, is first referenced in a poem from Mesopotamia in 2100 BC. Panacea was originally a Greek goddess of a cure-all. The term snake oil salesman goes back as far as the 18th century to reference those kind of hucksters that would sell miracle cures.
So people have always been chasing the dream of
exactly,
health,
yeah.
Optimum health.
And the problem is as well that, you know, just like those hucksters, the snake oil salesman, you make the claim, you make your sale, you move on before science can catch up and show that this doesn't actually work or it's potentially harmful. So, and the internet has just sped that up. You can do that an awful lot quicker now than you could have done 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So the snake oil salesman, and we're going to talk more about this, would arrive in a town, make all sorts of claims about a product, sell it, and be gone before people realise that it was hokum.
Exactly, yeah. And we're seeing that essentially still happen today. You know, you have people who are selling products online. They're making all sorts of promises about what they can do. And it takes a long time for science to study that and, you know, put reports together and show that this is maybe useless or potentially even dangerous. And, you know, we know about fad diets and all these kind of things. People move on quite quickly. So by the time we actually know this isn't working or it's no better than the last thing, the sales have been made. People have gotten rich off them.
Yeah, so it's a case of buyer beware. But we've got to know, don't we, just what those scams look like and what we need to be looking for in order to avoid them.
Yeah, exactly. And they can be all sorts as well, because, you know, you might simply have people just trying to squeeze money out of people. You know, it might be a free trial that you just forget about and suddenly you realise you've been charged hundreds of euro over the last few months. Or the gym membership that's really hard to cancel. Some of the nastier ones might, you know, boil down to products that just overpromise and underdeliver, or maybe prey on people's insecurities, which, you know, is obviously a big part of the wellness industry. It might be, you know, a diet or an exercise regime that guarantees the impossible, or a herbal remedy that doesn't actually do anything, maybe other than give you a placebo effect. But there are some kind of really insidious examples as well, especially where large amounts of money are extracted from people. And again, you know, often people in vulnerable situations, you know, being promised that something that's wrong in their lives, or they feel is wrong in their lives, it can be solved. You know, some of the worst examples involve people's lives being put at risk as well, either by convincing them that this thing is going to help them, or by convincing them not to go down the traditional medicine route. People might remember Primetime report a few years ago about a cult claiming that industrial bleach could cure autism, for example. We also have the example of a wellness influencer in Australia, Belle Gibson. She claimed to be managing several cancers, including a malignant brain tumour, through her diet, exercise, and alternative medicine. She's estimated to have made about $1 million in sales of her app and her cookbook on the back of this. She promised $300,000 of that would go to charity. And she even encouraged people not to go down the traditional medicine route, to follow her methods instead. And in the end, it turned out she'd lied about pretty much everything. She didn't have cancer. She'd never given the money to charity. Even her name and her age and everything, it was just a complete fabrication. And she made huge amounts of money on the back of that.
Yeah, you see, and when you're in a vulnerable situation like those that you mentioned, you will search around for any answers that you can find.
Absolutely. You know. And you know, these things are often presented, you know, real medicine will tell you, look, this isn't guaranteed, or it's difficult. You know, where these are often presented in a very
as guaranteed.
This will do the job. All you have to do is take this medicine or buy this product.
So how do we avoid these scams?
Well, I think the golden rule of shopping in general applies here. If it seems to be good to be true, it probably is. So if someone is suggesting that a product or service is the silver bullet to help whatever problem you have, you really need to scrutinise what's being offered. And in fairness, in some cases, they might actually be offering something that is somewhat useful, but it's just not worth paying for. It's just not worth paying what they're asking for. You know, you think of a fad diet. You know, and it essentially always boils down to eat less junk, you know, cut your calories, move more, whatever it might be. But they package in a different way. Every couple of years, it's a new kind of, you know, sheen on top of it.
Yeah.
Makes it seem like it's some innovation.
And charge you for it.
And they charge you a lot for this expertise. Another golden rule of shopping is to be careful who you give your credit card details to, and read the small print of what you're signing up to. So is it a reputable seller? Are you paying securely if you're paying online? Is it a one-off fee? Or are you going to be charged every month? Now, there are ways back if people do end up getting ripped off, especially if you're paying through a card. You can go to your bank and ask for a chargeback. It can take a bit of time, but it is a way of recouping money that was taken off you if you're defrauded in some way. And if you have a subscription service that you can't get out of, you can also ask your bank to block that as well. Again, it might take a little time. You have to fill in a form, but it is possible to do that if you can't break the subscription from the provider. You can go to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. Their website has details on this. But of course, that's all money. It's important, but people's health is more important, you know, and you know, you could end up taking something if you buy a product online that's very dangerous. We've lots of examples of that, and you know, just be careful what you're taking, make sure it's regulated and it's reputable.
All right, and be sensible. Adam, yeah. Thank you very much. You're always sensible. Adam McGuire, let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.